Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Monday, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend. Coming up on the show, the great climate migration, how the pandemic plus storms and fires are forcing people to move out of major cities, and where are they going? Plus, how staying home could harm you and your children's immune system, and what to do about it. That is coming up today.
Woo, we got a heavy hitting show today. I mean, honestly, I am excited coming off of the weekend. It was very nice. I went to the beach for a little minute. Like, it was a great, relaxing weekend, and I feel refreshed and ready to go because, hey, I've been raiding. There's a lot to talk about.
Totally. I must say, I feel good, but Ryan, I was not feeling good this weekend. That is hard when you have the weekend to recover and you have to like just take care of yourself. You can't even do the things you want to do because you feel like death. That was basically me. I was scared I got sick again.
Girl, I
mean, honestly was.
I wasn't going to say anything, but you are looking a little rough today.
Wow. Talk like about been, the dread.
Like you just been battling it out. That's all
I was. Saying.
Like,
I was battling it out. So you're lucky I'm here today. Okay. All right. Well, let's get into some what's trending this hour. Speaking of this weekend, yesterday, I actually got to catch up on that Bob Woodward interview on 60 Minutes. Definitely worth watching. It's online right now. He's, of course, the journalist who has this book coming out. I mean, he's a very iconic journalist. The book coming out, Rage, it's coming out this week. And there's been so many calls between him and Trump that have been released as we get into this book that is being released. And the calls are just very revealing. And as they continue to come out in his final call, with Woodward on August 14th, President Trump insisted that he had acted early in handling the pandemic.
A contest between you and Biden, it's going to be a contest between both of you and the virus. The virus is set because it's in real people's lives. You know, all those tens of millions of people who don't have jobs, who don't have that income. Listen, I mean, you and I.
Nothing more could have been done. Nothing more could have been done.
Well,
I acted early.
We'll
acted early.
Now, this is fascinating as we continue to see more things come out, because like last week, it was the call in February and how Trump said that he knew that the pandemic was a big deal and he was trying to downplay it. And you see how the narrative changes of these calls over time, and how Woodward keeps calling him out, right? And saying that, like, are you sure you're saying you did enough? Because you told me that you weren't, what you were saying to me is different than what you are saying in the public. And I'm sorry, I have to talk about this in the book.
This is just a literal archive, right? There's 18 interviews that took place from December 2019 to July 2020. So there's going to be a timeline that we're literally going to physically hear of Donald Trump's story change. And so it will be interesting to see how this pans out. But honey, I don't know what more shocking things could come out.
Now, speaking of interviews, in a new interview with Tamron Hall, his first after going through a public scandal that involved drugs and accusations of infidelity, Florida Democrat Andrew Gillum has come out as bisexual.
And to be very honest with you, when you didn't ask the question, you put it out there, is whether or not I identify as gay. And the answer is I don't identify as gay, but I do identify as bisexual. And that is something that I have never shared publicly before.
I am so proud of him, for him and his wife specifically. And I can't wait to watch this interview once I'm done with the show today, because honey is going to be great. And yeah, he didn't have to come out to us. He didn't have to tell us that piece of information, but he courageously did. And he's standing up and telling the truth his way. And he is getting ahead of the story, in all honesty. I do want to know how Republicans are going to try to twist his words and twist this new confidence and twist the conversation, much needed conversation about bisexuality happening in this country, and, like, you know, are just talking about it in general. And so, yeah, it's going to be quite interesting to watch this whole thing play out. But kudos to him. He was great.
Yeah, and in March, you know, the reason why also he's so in the headlines, this is a big deal for Hall to get this interview. Gillum was found in a hotel room where there had been a drug overdose. And according to police reports, he was found vomiting in the room with another man that was passed out. He denied using any drugs at the time. And days later, he said in a statement that after his race for governor, he actually fell into a depression that led to alcohol abuse. He's been in rehab since. So this is definitely a big part of his recovery, and we applaud him on that. All right, that was some juicy What's Trending this hour. Let's move into some more juicy stuff with the Tea Report.
All right, the Tea Report, you know, is what we call our pop culture moments that are trending right now, honey, because I be keeping track. Now, let's talk Demi Lovato. She is on the defense over this past weekend after screenshots that appeared to show her fiancé, Max Einrich, lusting over Selena Gomez and other pop stars surfaced online. Now, here's the thing. He basically said in one tweet that was from back in the day, he said, now, you can't think if a Selena Gomez and that other girl, which he was referring to Demi, he said, you can't think they're both pretty because there's only one that's pretty and her name starts with an S. That's what he said in one of these alleged tweets. Well, in several Snapchats posted by this Twitter user, you literally, you see what I just described. And so Demi had to slam those screenshots as doctored and faked on her Instagram story. And she also said, well, stop putting women against each other. Like, what's the point here? And so she's not having it. Now, this doesn't even, the drama train doesn't even stop. Kim Kardashian had to basically respond to all of the controversy surrounding her new Skims maternity shapewear, where basically people were saying, well, are you trying to make a pregnant woman look skinnier? Like, what's happening? She said this on her Instagram. She said, to anyone who has an issue with maternity solution wear, and if you haven't been pregnant before, you may not know the struggle of what it's like carrying all of this weight the way that I did with millions of strong women. And of course, Chrissy Teigen also responded to the, like, basically coming up and basically saying, hey, Kim is doing the right thing here. I even wear them. It's a whole bunch of drama. Check it out at We Are Channel Q, honey, and that's your Tea Report.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, coming up, Biden might be facing trouble with Latino and Latina voters. We discuss why next in 2 minutes. Top Latino Democrats are voicing a growing concern that Joe Biden's campaign has done minimal effort to win the support of their community, and that could have devastating consequences in the November election. And back with us to discuss this is Geraldo Cadava, Associate Professor of History and Latina and Latino Studies at Northwestern University. Thanks for being here. We love having you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
So we touched on this before with you, how the Hispanic Republican vote is pretty deep, right? So do you think things are changing as a younger generation comes into vote, and how the Republican Party has evolved under Trump? Or from this, does it seem like nothing is changing?
I think that it seems pretty resilient so far. And, you know, it's, of course, there's plenty of time for things to change. And the Biden campaign's late breaking efforts to reach out to Latinos could have an effect and help consolidate his support around him. But I think so far it seems like all signs point to Trump winning as much of a share of the Latino vote in 2020 as he did in 2016.
What?
I mean, it's so wild to me. What? You know, national surveys show Biden coming in slightly worse with Latinos than Hillary Clinton in 2016. Now, are Latino leaders still concerned over his time spent in the Obama administration and the tough deportation policies that happened during that administration? Like, how much does that really kind of play into this?
I mean, I think that's part of it. And I think that, you know, the negative interpretation of his time in the Obama administration is that he doesn't have much credibility among immigrant rights advocates to talk about immigration and what he would do differently from the Obama administration. I think he, you know, all along, he's kind of been having to toe that line carefully about right. how what he would do as president would be just like what they did in the Obama administration, because by and large, Obama remains a very popular figure among Democrats, and how he would depart. And I think immigration is one area in which Latinos want him to say that he would do something differently than Obama did. But I also think that that's just, you know, one part of a complicated picture. I think that in the primary campaign, you know, what he really staked his candidacy on was reaching out to a different group of voters than Latinos. He really was trying to reach out to African Americans, suburban housewives, as the kind of moderate candidate. And Sanders was the Democratic candidate who kind of captured all of the attention for his Latino outreach efforts. So I think part of why he's, you know, he's having to shift gears a little bit, moving away from this primary campaign where he was concentrating primarily on other groups of voters and having to expand his coalition a little bit.
Again, we're talking to Geraldo Cadava, Associate Professor of History and Latina and Latino Studies at Northwestern University, about Biden connecting with the Latino community and how Democrats are not happy about what he's been doing. So with that said, you know, with Sanders having garnered that support, do you think it's the responsibility of other Democrats to step up in those communities where they know they have support to say, hey, the time is now, we need to come together?
I think so. And I think that that is going on and it will continue to go on. And at the same time, you know, Biden will have, just wait, tomorrow begins Hispanic Heritage Month. And between September 15th and October 15th, you're going to see an onslaught of Hispanic outreach, Latino outreach by both campaigns, really. And I think that in that month, you will see, you know, Democratic Hispanic surrogates like Julian Castro and others kind of come out and rally the troops around Joe Biden. I think the question is whether it's like too little, too late. You know, I
mean, yes.
Latinos have been saying for a long time that the key to Latino outreach is prolonged, sustained engagement and investment in our communities. And that's something the Sanders campaign did really well. It's not like there wasn't a particular magic to that campaign. It's that Bernie Sanders, after his loss to Hillary Clinton in 2016, committed to kind of showing up in the Latino community and just established a presence there that he maintained over the course of years.
But Sanders also had that opportunity when we weren't in the middle of a pandemic. I just feel like there's no grace or space being provided in the sense of like, what is everyone's other like alternative? Trump? It just makes no sense to me.
That's true. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a great point. And, you know, maybe that will happen. I mean, and maybe both parties, both campaigns want to get to that kind of 70 to 30 split among Latinos, where the Democrat wins about 70%, maybe a little more. The Republican wins about 30%, maybe a little less. That's what Democrats want to have happen. And there's still time for that to happen. The polls suggest that it could get there. What's concerning is that, you know, some polls in key states like Texas and Florida actually show Trump winning the Latino vote and performing, you know, 10 points better than he did in 2016 compared with Biden performing 10 points less. 10 points.
What are they seeing, though, just as we wrap things up? Because it seems like from my perspective, around immigration, around supporting communities of different socioeconomic backgrounds, it doesn't feel like Trump is the guy that I would say could lead in that way. So what are Latino communities seeing that they need that they're not getting from Biden and they're getting from Trump?
Well, I think part of it is just that the Latinos for Trump campaign has been doing this for much longer. I mean, Trump has been able to use the kind of bully pulpit of the presidency, if you want to call it that, to kind of like reach out to Latinos for many years. And he's had people in Puerto Rico and Texas and California for years talking about how well Latinos are doing in this economy. I mean, Latinos have been extremely affected by the pandemic. And so it kind of stretches your imagination to think, to wonder how Latinos could possibly be buying into this economic argument even now.
Yeah.
But he's been working it for so long. And I think the idea is that what the argument he wants them to buy is that despite the pandemic, the economy is going to bounce back and things will return to being as great for you as they were beforehand. That seems a little incredible given how much devastation there's been, but it seems like it is an argument that has resonated with a significant percentage of them.
Oh my God. All right. Well, thank you again for being with us. Lots of work to be done.
Sounds like I was the bringer of good news today.
Yes, as you see from my face. Geraldo Cadava is the Associate Professor of History and Latina and Latino Studies at Northwestern University. Now coming up, could working from home actually be harming your immune system? find out in 2 minutes. Could social distancing actually be putting you in danger and making your immune system worse? Well, back with us is Dr. James Simmons. Of course, you know him as the co-host of Drop the Subject as well with Ali. Thanks for being here, James.
Pleasure. Happy to be back with y'all. It's been a minute.
I know. We miss you. We really
miss
do.
Miss you too.
You know, and since you've been here, I actually got strep throats. I don't even know. I feel like a child, but like, you know, I got sick a lot when I was at the radio station last year. I was surprised to get sick now because I'm not really.
We all were getting sick a lot at the radio station just because you're in that small little studio. Everyone's sharing mics. You know, it happens. I was sick towards the end of the last year. Really bad.
Yep.
True. I think that actually really speaks to, you know, not to like derail the conversation from the beginning, but you know how we talk about how it's so much more dangerous for you to be inside in small groups with COVID? It's because the air doesn't circulate very well. So it seems to make sense. We all were coming in the studio, right? There's like three or four people in there for the morning show and then our show and then yours, then Loveline, and people are in and out, and the air's not circulating very well. And so how that applies with COVID, it also applies with other sort of droplet / respiratory illnesses as well. And then, so back to this point about your immune system, you know, I think what's really good about our immune system and being around a lot of people like that, like we were last year when we were all still in the studio, was that we were being exposed to that. You get a little bit sick from it. It's kind of annoying, but then ultimately it boosts your immune system to keep you from getting super sick from other pathogens, from other stuff in the air, right? And that's kind of what we're sort of talking about here. Now that we're not around a lot of people, like, are we going to get more sick? And it's a really, really interesting question.
Yeah. And I guess for kids as well, you know, as you're building your immune system when you're younger, how important is it to be exposed to certain things versus keep yourself exposed from other things or your kids exposed from other things?
There's definitely the great line from this, of course, is not one size fits all. So people are very, very different, you know, and as we grow in science and as we learn, we're sort of changing our recommendations a little bit to try to fit what is going to be best for people. And I think the best example of that is, you know, there's lots of kiddos who were and are allergic to eggs and shellfish and nuts, like peanut butter, right? Like those are the big ones. And so what we did for the longest time was keep people as far away from those as possible. Well, now, as we learn more about how our immune system and allergens work, we're actually now telling parents in a very safe and controlled way, expose your kids to a little bit of eggs, shellfish, and peanut butter early on. And we mean a little bit, like baby toddler smells the peanut butter. See what happens. Then a few days later, toddler like has a little tiny lick of a peanut butter from the spoon, and that's it. Like you're not feeding goo gobs of peanut butter. And what this does is it trains the body how to respond to these outside influences coming into it. And those same things are just like outside viruses and bacteria. If we get a little bit of exposure to it, it builds our immune system against larger exposures to it so we don't get as sick.
Yeah. Again, Dr. James Simmons joins us as we talk about our immune system right now. And could social distancing or being just stuck in our homes actually be making our immune system worse?
Well, what was so interesting is when I was reading this article that we're referencing in the New York Times, it was something about like if people are kind of staying away from hospitals, like especially parents with kids, when they would have normally gotten these vaccination shots, is that all going to be kind of damaging to everyone in the future? Since it's going to be kind of like a long, prolonged time since people are kind of going back to the normal of like, oh, go get your shots.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, you bring up an amazing point. I think that is the bigger concern here. So if there ends up being an overall sort of decrease in immunity against common diseases like the common cold, things like that, particularly in kiddos, I think it'll be really, really subtle because there's so much that goes into our immune system. It's not just exposure to those things. So what's great is, you know, you send your kids to school, they get exposed to a bunch of RSV or whatever, they get a little bit sick, they get over it, and off they go. And then the next
How does that translate to like if kids come home and they're giving it to their parents or their grandparents, like their family members who are a little bit older?
Totally. Same thing. So that's why we're like, oh, wait, let's say that kiddo who got RSV on the playground, right, comes home, gives it to one of their parents. Now, RSV is much less dangerous in adults than it is in kiddos. So this would be sort of serious. But the adult would be exposed. Your body would remember it from a previous exposure. You might get sniffles or a little bit of a cough or something, whatever. But then, you know, you feel better a couple days later and off you go. And so what I think is really interesting to your point, Ryan, is that what's more important, though, are these vaccines. Like, we vaccinate against illnesses that kill people that have been previous pandemics. And so it is really important for parents and everyone really to keep going to your primary care providers or wherever you get these vaccinations and keep getting those vaccinations, because those we cannot go without getting those.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why we don't have smallpox and malaria right now is because of that. And I get the you know, it's okay to be skeptical and it's okay to question, right? I just think that the movements being created could be very problematic as we move into this new era.
So, James, what would you suggest us to do to give our immune systems a boost right now?
So keeping our immune system healthy right now, it's really a lot of the things that we should be already doing, but it's really hard in quarantine. It's really hard during this pandemic and the world sort of literally being on fire right now. But if you smoke, stop. A really nice, well-balanced diet. Lots of fruits and vegetables, if those are appropriate for you as well. This is a really great time to exercise. Exercise has some very, very well-researched components that will help keep our immune system healthy. Now is not the time to start picking up those April and May COVID drinking habits, by the way. Don't drink a ton. And sleep is really the most important. Make sure you get good, adequate sleep every single day.
Well, thank you so much again for being here. That was Dr. James Simmons, co-host of Drop the Subject with Ali Weekdays right here on Channel Q. Now coming up, should closeted members of the LGBTQ plus community be able to release stories about the community? We discuss that next in 2 minutes. Is it wrong to tell a queer story when you haven't come out of the closet yet? And that's what many are debating after this famous writer recently came out. In an essay published on Medium in August, Becky Albertalli, who wrote the book Simon versus the Homo Sapiens, which went on to inspire the feature film, it was a huge movie, Love, Simon, and now it's also a series. She opened up about her sexuality for the first time and said she had felt forced to come out after being accused of profiting off of communities she had no connection to. And so this brought up a bigger conversation, and she was met with criticism, including from Gabby Dunn, who's been on the show before, who's a social media star, author, comedian. She's also bisexual. And she said, I sort of think you shouldn't create queer media and then feel weird when people ask you if you're queer. She also said, or maybe if you're grappling with it, you should refrain from writing about the community you're not part of until you are comfortable being part of it.
Girl, I hate
that. Is that the right approach?
I hate that take so much. It honestly is kind of, it's this weird embracing of like a cis heteronormative view of the world where like they're automatically saying that, like what she's saying is kind of like straightness is the default, and saying that, oh, I'm automatically assuming that this author is straight. So which means until you come out, you tell me you're gay or you're a part of this community in some form or some way, then I don't want to hear from you. You have no right to be telling these stories. When if you're not thinking about it in a from a bigger like picture, it mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times when it comes to writing and being an author, I'm not any of those obviously, but a writer and if you're an author, you are one expressing yourself, you're allowing yourself yeah. to kind of go through this form of like therapy in a way, which is allowing you to express yourself and the feelings that you may be feeling internally, because you can express them, you know, out in the open. And so this idea of kind of gatekeeping and policing what you need to know about a person in order for them to tell you, for you to accept their story is an issue for me. I just don't really like that.
Yeah, I could see how it could be problematic, including, and as we talked about off air, how there are many places where it's not safe to come out right now or at all in real time as we speak, to think that that would have been okay. For instance, when you're writing something, maybe you don't realize it's going to blow up and become one of the biggest books or series out there or movies, right? That was never your intention. You just wanted to get your story out there while you are still processing who you are and figuring it out. And then yeah. it becomes huge and becomes bigger than you. And of course, you have a responsibility and accountability to it. You didn't think you were going to have, right? And nothing prepares you for that. And yeah. I think there's two sides. There's that side. And then there's a side to say that if you're going to tell the story of being queer and coming out, isn't it ironic that you haven't come to terms with it? But maybe that's your way of coming to terms with it.
Yeah, I think it's also why it was so touchy and why Gabby's getting a lot of backlash is because it's this idea of outing a closeted person, which you should never do. You should never be, you should never pressure a person. I think from this author, she spoke about, you know, how she's had such negative experiences where she finally felt felt pressured to have to tell us her business. When in all honesty and actuality, we don't deserve that. We're not owed that. Also, critiquing queer content and critiquing and making sure that the storytelling is being told authentically is okay. But also there's a line that should never be crossed when it comes to gatekeeping and saying, well, if you are closeted, you have no place here until you are ready to be, you know, accept your true self. That's not true at all. That's actually quite false.
Yeah. And I said, when the project did become as big as it did, this author shouldn't have been surprised that people were going to ask her that. And unfortunately, whether she likes it or not, should have been prepared for those questions, right?
But we should also be shifting that. That question should never be asked unless someone volunteers that information. Just because she should have known that it was going to happen doesn't mean that it makes it right.
And would you ask a straight writer, hey, does this come from personal? Well, you do say, does this come from personal experience? But you don't say, hey, are you straight? Do you have, can you tell these straight stories in an authentic way?
Exactly.
You would never ask
that. Here's where you can put that energy. Put that energy on the publisher for not creating a space for that author to feel like that she could have been completely herself. And then also put that energy on society because straight is not the default. I'm sorry, sis, but we are in 2020, queerness is very real and alive, and being a heterosexual is not the default anymore. So don't automatically assume.
And let's not force anyone in the queer community have to come out if they want to put a work out there to the world. Now, coming up, one college is already canceling spring break to stop the spread of COVID-19. That is next in What's Trending This Hour. We've got some more show coming at you, including these stories: how to quit your job during a pandemic without going broke, because it's something that some of you might be wondering about. Plus, the new study that reveals... how lockdown has made you a better person. This is really interesting and we want to get into it. Has lockdown made you a better person? I mean, it doesn't feel like it when you look at the country right now, but according to a new study, we're all better people for it.
Well, and we need to give also our natural, like our personal perspective. Like, I would love for you to answer that question. I'm going to answer it as well.
All right, stay tuned for those answers coming up. But first, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. President Trump talked to California's Secretary for Natural Resources, Wade Crawford, about working with the state to combat the effects of climate change.
As the governor said, we've had temperatures explode this summer. You may have learned that we broke a world record in the Death Valley, 130 degrees. But even in greater LA, 120 plus degrees. But I think we want to work with you to really recognize the changing climate and what it means to our forests.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Now, that's all well and good, but, you know, there's also major things that I think environmentalists have been wanting Trump to do that he should look at in a serious way if he want to do those things.
Trump didn't even answer him in a very serious way. He was laughing about this and like chuckling at, you know, oh, well, I don't think science knows at all. Like, it's like very gross and condescending. It's like this guy is pleading, being like, our world needs for us to figure this out. Our country needs for us to figure this out. And he's just like, well, it'll get colder. Trust me. I'm just like, girl, he gets on my nerves. He's the worst.
Yeah, it's going to get colder from the evil that you're putting on the country.
His heart is cold.
The heart. Yeah, the heart will get cold. Everywhere else will be sweating. Okay, now Oracle has been chosen as TikTok's tech partner as Microsoft was rejected. So this has been a big story, you know, TikTok, because President Trump has basically said that they needed to find a U.S. owner and Microsoft was in the running. But according to the latest news, Microsoft is out and Oracle is in as a tech partner.
I wonder what happened.
Yeah, who knows? They would take a majority ownership stake of the social media app. And that's from people involved in negotiations. Who knows what happened? It would be interesting to get more details on this and why Oracle was a better fit.
I don't even know who Oracle is. It's so interesting because at the top of the conversation, it felt like Microsoft was a done deal. Like they were just waiting to handle it. But it just shows you how quickly this stuff can change in seconds. It's weird.
Exactly. Well, maybe we'll have a tech reporter on to get more into that, because as much as this is like an industry news story, it's still pretty intriguing to a lot of people considering everyone or their kid is on this app. Now, Ohio State University announced it will cancel spring break next semester in an effort to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in the university community. So sorry for that, spring breakers. In a letter Friday to students, faculty, and staff, the executive vice president said the university would instead have two instructional breaks with no classes on February 9th and March 31st. I mean, they should just give, I don't know, people a break, maybe, but
no.
Leave the campus?
You can't trust these kids. I'm sorry. Do you remember that? Did you see that video that went viral over the weekend? It was like a police officer breaking up a college party in Miami, and he won. They were all white, so you already know how it was handled with such care, and just he was like scolding them. But basically, this boy was partying with like 8 or 9 of his friends, and they all tested positive for COVID, just hanging out. And it's just wild. It's crazy. You can't trust these kids. I'm sorry.
Yeah, or just say no spring break and we'll end school early.
That's
right?
It.
End of the year early. Yeah, as of Thursday, OSU has reported just over 2,000 student cases of COVID-19 with a test positivity rate of about 3.9%. All right, that was so much trending this hour. Let's move into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
All right, we got your tea report, those pop culture stories that are trending right now. And guess who's back in the news? J.K. Rowling. Her latest book is literally going viral because guess what? It's transphobic. It's about a murderous cis man who dresses as a woman to kill his victims.
Oh, okay. I see.
It's so gross. I honestly feel like she needs some help at this point because she is really obsessed with trans people and she's really obsessed with telling unfortunate stories. Basically, it's about a private detective protagonist, Corman Strike, investigating a cis male serial killer who dresses as a woman to kill his cis female victims, according to an early write-up. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I know no one's going to support this, and she's been trending all day on social, but she is the worst. Let's move on to some happy news.
Okay.
So now, guess what, Shira? We have an Airbnb situation, and guess what we can now list and get on Airbnb?
Well, I want to hear.
It is the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air mansion. It's on Airbnb for the first time. Will Smith is offering fans the chance to chill out, max, and relax all cool for only $30 a night. How cool is that?
$30? Yeah. Well, that's accessible. Yeah, we should do a broadcast from there.
Basically, he worked with the owners of the Brentwood, California house to rent out the property to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the hit 90s sitcom that ran for 6 seasons on NBC. So that is your tea report of the pop culture moments that are trending right now.
Wait, did Netflix pick up Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
No. Okay. So Netflix didn't pick it up. It's HBO Max that just picked up they have the series, like the full series, because it's a Time Warner situation. And then there's like two separate spinoffs. So there's supposed to be a reboot on HBO Max. And then there's a reboot on Peacock, the Bel-Air, the drama, the dramatic version of the show that.
Yes, that's his project. Okay, yes. Got it. Thank you for the update, Ryan. Now, coming up, have you thought about visiting a theme park during the pandemic? Well, coming up next, we discuss why people are still flocking to them despite all the madness. That's next in 2 minutes. While we're still in the middle of a pandemic, many people are still flocking to bars and beaches. And one place you might not associate with social distancing, theme parks. But why? Why would someone want to do this? And I've seen those pictures and videos. I mean, it's not empty. It's not like a ghost town. They're like wearing masks right next to each other. It doesn't seem like a lot of fun. So psychologist Bill Wright is with us right now to break this down. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me again.
So obviously we know there's a capitalist reason why theme parks are open again, because like Disney has suffered a nearly $10 billion decline in revenue this year because of extended COVID-19 closures. But what drives a person to want to go to a theme park during a pandemic?
Well, I think one of the challenges is that people in general are pretty poor risk assessors. And so we either have a tendency to overestimate or underestimate risk. And I think in this situation, there's a lot of factors causing people to really underestimate the risk of catching COVID right now.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, right? It's so annoying because over the weekend, I saw this video come out where there was an anti-mask protest in Utah. And it's so frustrating because there, these people are really saying, and even people that attended Trump's latest rally were saying that, oh, it's all fake. It's fake this, it's fake that. So how much does the media really play into that of what you just said? Kind of like this not understanding the risk.
Yeah, they play a bit of a role because it's really hard to correct incorrect information once you've heard it. And part of the challenge is really is that even though there's been so many people who have unfortunately died from COVID, a lot of us are probably operating without having any personal experience with the disease, without knowing anybody who's either had the virus or died from the virus. So that's one of the factors that makes us underestimate risk. Like if I hadn't seen it personally, then it isn't nearly as scary. The second part is I think people are really fatigued and restless. And yeah. Those are some of the emotions that are really driving these behaviors of wanting to go out and do things. And then last, I think it's this sort of faulty logic where, you know, we say to ourselves, if it wasn't safe, these theme parks wouldn't be open, right? So we're not really taking into account that capitalist argument, right? That these theme parks aren't looking out for our well-being. They're trying to make money. But instead we're interpreting as, well, if it was dangerous, then I wouldn't even be allowed to go.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to psychologist Vil Wright about theme parks opening right now and why Americans wouldn't stay away from them, why it seems safe. I mean, and I get the social distancing. I get that they're, making sure things are clean. But, you know, I'm also thinking about you're on these things and like everyone's putting their hands everywhere. Like if you bring kids there, who says they're not going to like put their hands somewhere and put it in their eye or their mouth? I mean, I bite my nails even sometimes, and it's hard for me to forget doing that, right? What am I putting in my mouth? I'm not sure sometimes. So even with that, why would you want to bring your family to a theme park right now?
I think there's a bit of a nostalgia factor. I mean, I'm hearing anecdotally people telling me that they're watching old movies that they used to watch as a kid or reading old books or listening to the music from their teenage years.
Yeah.
To remind them of better times. So I think a theme park has that value to people. But I also think that fear we felt at the beginning of the pandemic is starting to dissipate. And it was that fear that was really driving us to engage in the risk averse behaviors, like making sure we were still washing our hands every time we left the house and you know, hand sanitizing all over the place. And once that fear starts to go away, it's not driving that stay away behavior anymore. And so people are just being, you know, just wanting to engage in the things that they used to engage in.
You know, yeah. What's super interesting too, we talked about it last week about this intense feeling that a lot of parents are feeling of like trying to just be the best parent ever. And I also do that plays a lot into the idea of like, oh, my kids are restless at home. They're bored. Let's just take them up to Six Flags or Disneyland and call it a day. How much does that kind of play with where a lot of parents are just needing to really kind of stretch their legs and get their kids out the house?
Yeah, I think parents are both worn out, right? From having to everybody be at home and in everybody's space all the time. I think they're worried about their child's social well-being and so wanting to get them out there. And I think there's just not a lot of really great options right now. And so possibly when you see things like a theme park where it's outside, that might feel safer than taking them to some sort of indoor park, for example. So I think for parents, there's often this challenge of there's not really a great decision here. There's just which one is the less bad decision.
And what will it take for humans to obey guidelines?
It feels like a therapist is like a psychologist Super Bowl where they are really getting to examine the human brain.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one of the things you are seeing is the ways in which psychology really does help answer a lot of these questions about people's behavior and why we engage in the things that we do. It's really critical that leaders give clear, consistent information on what we know is safe and what's not safe. That when things aren't safe, that we don't give people even options to engage in them, that we put some boundaries around some of the activities that people are going to be drawn towards, but could actually put themselves and others at risk, given the fact that we just aren't that great at assessing risk when it comes to science. We're not that informed often, and to find that information takes a lot of work.
Yeah. And I feel like fear, I don't know if the fear tactic works.
No, because I mean, if you would think it would if the people heard the number 200,000 people have unfortunately died in this country. Like, it's just wild to me.
Yeah, you're right. The fear factor in this case isn't working, and it definitely doesn't in a lot of ways. So, you know, the just don't do drugs kind of campaign in the past also took that kind of fear approach and wasn't particularly effective. So what we know is effective is really taking this approach of we're all in this together, and that by engaging in safe behaviors, we're protecting each other.
And by giving the information and trusting that information, if we can, from someone. Again, thank you so much for joining us today for this.
Thanks for having me.
That was psychologist Vail Wright. Now coming up, are you stuck in a job but afraid to quit because of the current state of the economy and of your bank account? We tell you how you can have your cake and eat it too in 2 minutes. Many of us feel lucky to even have a job during this time, but what do you do if you aren't happy with your current job and want to find something new? Do you take a leap of faith? Or even, you know, some people talk about a sabbatical. Is this the right time? How do you even make that work? Well, personal finance expert for NerdWallet, Sarah Rathner, joins us right now to dive in. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess, is there a safe way to quit your job right now?
Well, the safest way, if you were just looking for something new, would be to job hunt and find some new job while you're currently employed. That's obviously the ideal. But yeah, with so many people losing their jobs right now, that's not always an option. And so you do need to prepare if you're going to be out of work for a couple months or longer.
Right. I was like, how is this even something people are entertaining right now? Because a lot of these jobs have hiring freezes going on. So it's like, it's not like, even if you were to look, it really doesn't seem like you would be able to find a job.
There are job opportunities out there, depending on what industry you're in and, you know, where you live. I mean, it's kind of the golden age for remote work. So you're no longer tied to the city where you live. You can look for jobs anywhere around the country and even around the world.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, this is so different than it was even 6 months ago. If you are open to remote work, and right now you might not even have a choice, you don't have to look for a job where you live. You can look around.
Yeah, that's what I think is exciting about this time. If we're going to like find the silver lining of all of this stuff, is that there are options that weren't available before. And this idea of working remotely, most companies wouldn't have said yes to that in the past.
Exactly. And so if you live in a city with a smaller job market, suddenly you don't have to move to a larger, more expensive area just to compete in the big leagues.
And what do you do, I guess, if you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to look for a job, I'm going to quit before finding something new. I guess, what do you need to do strategy wise in terms of your budget to make sure that you have a safety blanket in a way?
You definitely have to prepare financially, because you can lose a lot of money in a few months without an income. So you definitely want to take a look at your emergency savings, beef that up just in case your car needs repairs while you're unemployed. Things always break when you least expect it.
You have to prepare.
Yes.
That happened to me during this quarantine, where I had like, I feel like I changed like 3 tires. I had tires just blow up, and I'm like, I'm not even driving anywhere. What is happening now? But you know, what's interesting is I feel like a lot of these articles are always saying, well, make sure you have a side hustle. But my thing is, how does someone even figure out what a side hustle is and how it would benefit them in that sense? Like, how do you even start that?
You do need to be realistic about how much time you have, especially if you're dropping out of the workforce to help homeschool your kids, for example. You might not have a ton of time or energy to dedicate to a side hustle right now. That is totally fine. There's so many people out there saying, if you don't use this pandemic to like build up $1 million side business, like what are you even doing with your life? But you're doing plenty with your life and you might not have the time available, and that is okay. It's okay to be realistic about that. But if you do have the time in your schedule, look into side hustles that are kind of tied to the industry you're already in. It's a great way to keep your network fresh and your skills fresh. So if you want to go back to full-time work in the future, you don't have that gap on your resume, you have more people in your network who can vouch for you, who can help you find new jobs. And that can be a really great way to enter back into the workforce later on without much of a gap.
Yeah, again, we're talking to personal finance expert for NerdWallet, Sarah Rathner. As we discuss possibly how to quit your day job during a pandemic without going broke, we're not suggesting you do it right now. Don't look to us as being liable should anything happen if you quit your job in the future.
Right.
We're just having the conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. It's your life. We're not going to tell you what to do with it, but for sure, you definitely want to prepare. One other thing to think about are all the benefits you get from your employer beyond your salary, because those have dollar value. I'm talking health insurance that's subsidized by your employer, even life and disability insurance. You don't think about those things, but those types of insurance can protect you if you become ill or you get injured and you can't work, or heaven forbid, you pass away and you have people in your life who rely on you financially. And it's a way to help provide support for them when you are no longer around. And so you want to think about those things because that's a pretty high percentage of your overall compensation when you have a full-time job. And suddenly you have to pay for them yourself. That's really expensive.
I didn't even think of that either. But my thing is, I feel like a lot of people, especially unfortunately when the pandemic hit, a lot of people lost their jobs. Unemployment was like a lifesaver for folks. Is that something that can still be relied on?
It's not as high as it was when the CARES Act was adding an additional $600 a week onto what you would ordinarily earn. That was definitely a huge lifesaver for people who were laid off or fired during the pandemic. Right now, it's back down to normal levels. And right now, there is no ruling from Congress on if additional help will come our way. We don't know yet. So that is something to think about. I wouldn't rely on it beyond what you would normally get as a baseline, but just keep in mind that if you quit your job voluntarily, you might not qualify for unemployment. So, And if you're fired with cause, same thing. So if you're laid off, however, or let go because your position was being eliminated, your company was shutting down, that's when you're more eligible for unemployment. And so the way you leave a job can affect if you qualify.
All right. A lot of things to take into account here. Thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you.
That was personal finance expert for NerdWallet, Sarah Rathner. Now coming up, a new study claims that people think quarantine has made them a better person. Is that true? We discuss that next in 2 minutes. Has lockdown made you a better person? Now think about that for a moment, because it seems like it has made many people think they're better people or individuals. 2/3 of Americans said quarantine has made them a better person. And that's according to a new survey. So let's talk about this. The poll that looked at 2,000 Americans over the age of 21 looked at the positive changes to come from this challenging time and the way that we all have reprioritized what we value. And they came out with some interesting things. It revealed that over 55% of people were a bit embarrassed by some of the things they valued pre-quarantine. And the many months spent at home gave 70% of them a way to look at their life differently and in a more positive light, right? So I guess this comes from the study, but what do we think? Do you think this whole thing has made you a better person, Ryan?
Well, one, real quick, I want to say we can look at this poll in several different ways, right? We can look at it as this can feel very valid and true to a lot of people, because for me, I think especially in the beginning of quarantine, there was a lot of moments of reconciliation. There was a lot of moments of wanting to check in with people. Like, it felt very transformative. Like, this has been a very transformative moment. So that personally, I have to kind of agree with, right? I do think there's been a lot that has just put it into perspective, even the ideas of breaking down these stories that you were telling yourself and how that's not even probably true anymore. You know, it really shows who we really are. And so for me, when I'm looking at America as the whole and what I'm currently seeing, especially when I'm seeing like anti-mask rallies and people are still fighting that, and the racism that we're really seeing, so many Black people have died during this time, unfortunately, it doesn't really seem like as a whole, as a country, we are better people. It seems like there has been a large awakening, but are we better people? I am not sure.
Well, that's thing. Our like ability for work-life balance, maybe how we value the things in our life. We're grateful, like on an individual level, perhaps. But I'm wondering if we're really putting those values into action as it relates to like above and beyond ourselves and our households, right? Because if you think of our country overall and where we're at, I don't think if you look back in time, you would say like, wow, it seems like people really use this time to level up and be better to each other. I feel like anyone looking back at this time, historians or even aliens looking at us right now, might be like, wow, they are falling apart in the lockdown.
Yeah.
And so it's something to think about. And then like, I on a personal level, I feel like, has it made me a better person? I feel like it's definitely made me take a hard look at the things in my life that I you know, I want and how I value my friends and family, gratitude, presence, all those things. Like it's put it in the spotlight and on under a microscope in a way. And it's challenged me how much I'm going to actually live those values and those things that I preach. But then I look at that, then what's the next level of that? Like, how does that connect to our society right now? And I think that's the one thing that I feel like is not possibly converting, in all honesty, as I look at what's happening. And check out Netflix's The Social Dilemma, because it really talks about that, like how social media, and we all know this, and this is kind of connected to this, is like actually pushing us apart, because it's feeding us the things we obviously care about, but to the point where it's creating more division than connection.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, we've only been in this situation. Like, we can't say that we've lived in a quarantine multiple times. This was very new for everyone.
We're still in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, so it does not feel like this is a great poll to be like, yeah, everyone feels this way. Well, genuinely, have they genuinely taken a look at themselves inward and outwards and as a country as a whole? And could they really still say that? I'm not really sure or sold, to be honest.
Well, time will tell, and also the history books, that's for sure. All right, well, coming up, we tell you the latest date that's being thrown around for when we can expect a vaccine. That is next in What's Trending This Hour. Coming up, we've got more show for you on this lovely Monday. It is lovely. It feels lovely, but yet please be careful out there, because here in California, I mean, my sinuses are dying.
It's sunny outside, yes, but it is not lovely. I stepped out on my balcony just a few minutes ago to get some air, and honey, what is happening here? It is so smoky outside. It's a lot. So please, everyone, stay safe, and like Shira said, be aware of the unhealthy air quality that is outside right now.
And yeah, a lot of conversations that I'm having with friends, and just if I'm catching up over work, is like a lot of people are surprisingly moving. A friend of mine's moving to Nashville. Another friend is moving to Colorado. Another friend is moving to Austin. This is like all in a week. Wow. I'm telling you. And these are people that live in LA. And we're going to be talking about the climate migration happening right now. And it's real and it's here. But
the good thing is you'll have somewhere to go when you're not socially distancing. So that's good. You'll be able to travel. Go be your friends in Nashville, Colorado.
See them. I thought, well, or who knows, maybe I'm going to decide to move somewhere that's not a mess like this. That's a threat, Ryan. I'm out of here. No, I would actually go to Canada right now, to Montreal, perhaps. But hey, can't necessarily do that this second. I'm very grateful to be here in Cali. I'm holding on, hoping for the best. Okay, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour, though. In an exclusive interview, NBC's Lester Holt sat down with Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman and addressed President Trump's suggestion that he is a never-Trumper.
I joined the president's team. I joined this administration well into this administration with the hopes of being able to do my job, with the hopes of being able to advance U.S. national security interests. I could say that I am now a never-Trumper. I was not a never-Trumper before. I was nonpartisan.
Now, if you remember, Vindman retired from the Army in July during what he called a vindictive campaign to block his promotion to full colonel. He also testified about witnessing Trump pressure the Ukrainian president in a phone call to conduct investigations that could hurt Joe Biden, which formed the Democrats' impeachment case against Trump, where he was later acquitted, of course, in the Senate. But this was a really big interview to come out. And let's talk about some vaccine news. The vaccine won't be available for everyone before the end of 2024. That's from the CEO of the world's biggest producer.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Adar Poonawalla, who's the CEO of the largest vaccine manufacturer, says that not enough COVID-19 vaccines will be available to inoculate the global population until at least, as I mentioned, 2024, the end of 2024. He also added that pharmaceutical companies are not increasing production capacity quickly enough to vaccinate everyone faster. Ooh. Okay, let's move on. That's some crazy news there. So Kid Rock is going to headline, this isn't surprising, a campaign rally for President Trump in Michigan today.
Girl, that is the worst and not surprising at all.
Yeah, the musician will join Donald Trump Jr. and his girlfriend Kimberly Guilfoyle at the rally in Harrison Charter Township, Michigan, according to announcement that they made this weekend. And finally, on What's Trending this hour, vinyl sales have outpaced CD sales in the U.S. for the first time since the 1980s. Yes, go vinyl. I just bought myself a record player, actually.
Wait, you did?
Yeah, I bought it like a month ago.
I thought you were going to buy me one for my birthday.
Well, then I hosted a party, well, a party of just us.
See, don't tell my outside. Business. It was just us.
Yes. That's
oh, my goodness.
It was
literally just us and pizza.
Yeah. We were social distancing. It was safe. Anyway. All right. Well, there you have it. If you're wondering what to get someone here, that's a good gift idea. Maybe I'll get it for you next time.
Whatever. Anyway, can we get to the tea report?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. Here are your pop culture stories that are trending right now. Now, if you are gay, I feel like gay Jesus really gave us a blessing over this past weekend, because Chris Evans, Captain America, he leaked his own nudes by accident over the weekend, and it made me very, very happy. Also, it made Shira very, very excited as well.
I mean, I was curious. It wasn't excitement, it was curiosity.
Girl, it's okay to be excited. I mean, he's so fine. Who hasn't been curious? Well, his brother, Scott Evans, went on social to poke fun at him because of this whole situation. He came back probably a day after saying, "Was off social media for the day yesterday, so what I miss?" So, you know, a lot of this moment, it was like a very cute and cheeky moment of him being like, yeah, who knows what went on?
Oh, really? Good to know. And it was deleted, by the way. So if you're trying to look for it, it's maybe somewhere online.
Well, yeah. It was deleted immediately, of course, screenshots were had. And who knows, honey? I don't know. But I love that story. Moving on. This is a crazy story coming from Cheer, the Netflix show that went viral. And I mean, cheerleader Jerry Harris, he actually has been on the show. We've interviewed him, friend of the show. Well, he is being investigated by the FBI after he allegedly solicited sex and sexually explicit photos from minors. Now, federal agents executed a search warrant at his home in Naperville, Illinois on Monday. As a part of the investigation, a spokesperson with the Bureau confirmed law enforcement were conducting court-authorized activity in the area, but declined to elaborate. Now, Jerry Harris was the breakout star of Netflix's docuseries Cheers. He has not been criminally charged. Also, he has not publicly commented on the allegations or investigation. He's actually deleted his Instagram. So this is wild news. And that's your tea report of all those pop culture moments that are trending right now.
All right, very unfortunate. Now, coming up, as climate change causes fires, hurricanes, and more problems in certain cities, many are saying the climate migration is here. We tell you what that means and what cities are safe havens next in 2 minutes. Every year, millions are displaced from their homes by climate change. Of course, we've got hurricanes, we've got floods, we've got fires happening right now as we see.
I mean,
we've got
2020.
Pandemics. I mean, and a lot of people are talking about the Great Migration, and that means something different right now. We're in it. The things we've read in history books, well, we are living it right now. So what does that mean? And what are these new cities that we might be migrating to? Well, we've got a really great guest to talk about this with us today. Thaddeus Pulaski, who's a managing director for the Center for Resilient Cities and Landscapes at Columbia University. Thanks for being here.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated by this topic. I'm talking about it, and you might not even realize that you're talking about this with your friends, as your friends might be talking about moving to different cities right now or not being able to go outside to breathe. And what does that mean for their lives and their children's? So how bad is the climate migrant crisis right now, Thaddeus?
Well, you know, it comes in like fits and starts, right? When there's a big event like Katrina or Sandy, a lot of people move away. I think, you know, in New York right now, everyone's talking about people fleeing because of the quarantine and maybe not coming back. So there are these push events, right, that like make people decide it's time to move. But then there's the slow pull of other things like insurance prices going up. And in Miami and lots of other cities, people are talking about climate gentrification, where a lot of people are getting priced out because it becomes too expensive to live in some places.
Which we will be talking about in this conversation, because I have a lot of concerns.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm from a small town in western Pennsylvania where I grew up. I was sort of like an economic migrant because there's really not much economic life. But our country is filled with thousands of these cities that were built up for people to live in like during the heyday of industrialism, and then were largely abandoned. We have a lot of cities that are like half abandoned all over this country. Some of them are coming back. Pittsburgh, Detroit is starting to come back in some ways, but not nearly the same levels of population that existed there before. So a lot of these Rust Belt and other cities are saying, hey, you know, we could actually support a lot more people in the future, and we don't have wildfires, and we have a lot of water and other things that might be useful in the long term. Big question is how do we make those places actually livable and attractive? I mean, obviously Detroit is a, you know, a major city with a lot going on there, but other cities like my hometown, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, what would it take to make a place like Johnstown a great place for people who are leaving the coasts or leaving the fire ravaged areas to find there?
Yeah, really important questions to ask. Again, that is Thaddeus Pulaski, who's from Columbia University, Managing Director for the Center for Resilient Cities and Landscapes, as we talk about climate migrants right now.
Yeah, and you spoke about gentrification. I felt like that is a huge part that plays into this, because how does it really play into this? Because even if people have to move and if they can't afford to go anywhere, like really what's the point? And also I think about how this could really accelerate the patterns of discrimination and conflict that we often see as a side effect of gentrification or like systemic racism.
Right. Right, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think that that's at the heart of the whole question here is how, you know, what are the principles, what are the kinds of policies and principles that we want to adopt as a society as this redistribution of population happens? I mean, this is really an opportunity for reparations, I think, in many ways. We've had this, the last 40 years of suburbanization has really been about securing white property in the suburbs. And that's, you know, plays into Trump's political strategy, or the Republican political strategy now, to turn suburbs and rural areas into like white privilege islands, whereas the cities are, Democratic run cities are sort of not in the calculus of the future of this country. But at the same time, we know that those are the engines of all of our progress, all of our culture, all of our economy, and also, you know, the promise of multicultural America is really in those cities. So I think this redistribution of population might mean that a lot of places, suburbs and small towns in general, get a lot more, in many ways, made to be welcoming multiculturally, places where everybody can own property, you know, and the squeeze on property ownership in cities is a large part of the reason for gentrification and displacement.
Totally. And on that note, as we wrap things up, what do cities need to do to prepare? Like, we talk about these havens, how do we go about building one?
Well, I mean, one thing is we need a Green New Deal. You know, I mean, that's the most essential thing, is that we really need to build a new economy that's beyond fossil fuels. I mean, obviously we've got to adapt to climate change, but at the same time, the transition, a just transition to a new kind of economy would provide a lot of jobs. And where those jobs could be would be some of the places that might be more secure against the hazards of climate change. So the old steel mills in the town where I'm from could become places where solar panels are manufactured. Jobs are critical. Infrastructure is critical. We really need, I think, the pandemic. 2020 is teaching us so much about the frailties in our society and economy, and just the incredible injustice in the opportunities in education and housing and everything else. So I would feel that if we could mount a Green New Deal in Biden-Harris administration that would actually make these places more livable in terms of infrastructure, in terms of educational opportunities, job opportunities, we would be fulfilling a lot of this promise of America.
All right, Thaddeus Pulaski, thank you so much again. I know we just are like touching on the surface of it, but still a lot of stuff to think about.
Yeah,
definitely. Again, Thaddeus is Managing Director for the Center for Resilient Cities and Landscapes at Columbia University. Now coming up, are you drowning in your workload? We'll find out how to say no and still be a team player. That is next in 2 minutes. These days, your job probably goes above and beyond your job description. description. So how can you continue being a team player while creating boundaries and giving yourself the space to say no? Well, organizational psychologist Dr. Laura Hambly joins us right now for this. Thanks for joining us on your birthday.
Oh, no problem.
And we talked about this, how she didn't say no.
How ironic.
Yeah, right?
This is an intervention.
So I guess... How do you say no at work right now? Because it feels scary with people losing their jobs every day. And it almost feels like if you do say no, you're not considered a team player, or you think that your employer will say to you, well, other people will say yes, so peace out.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a very timely topic because as a lot of people have transitioned suddenly to working remotely, it's easy to be working all the time. And we're seeing record levels of stress, anxiety, and potential burnout in people. So it's a real concern because uncertainty in our world at this time, people need to be taking care of themselves. And if you say yes to everything, what you're typically saying no to is your health, your wellness, and your mental health.
Yeah, and I get that. But how do you get your boss or employer to see that right now if they also are just trying to keep things going, whether it's a small business that they own or they're trying not to get fired?
Yeah, so I mean, it's just as much about what you say yes to as what you say no to. So you need to make sure that what you're saying yes to is the things that you can add real value and that fall within your talents and your skills. And what you're saying no to is some of those things that might be tempting or you're being pulled into that aren't the best use of your time and skills. So it's about being strategic about your yeses and strategic about your noes.
You know, and that is something that I am learning for sure right now, because I think, one, I feel like our producer is throwing shots at me because I am a person here known at the station that I don't normally say no. People can stretch me thin and I'm still like, yeah, I'm ready to do it. But I think as time grows, and I think my reasoning was for that was I was always told you want to work hard when you're young. You want to show people your work ethic, you know? Yeah. So what do you say to people like me who felt like, well, if I say no, then there's going to be someone else that comes in and does it better, and then they're going to get the gig next?
Well, I mean, that's a risk that you may be taking. But if you keep saying yes to a bunch of things, then you're impacting your quality, you're impacting your health, right? You're impacting your emotional wellness, all of these other things. So what you're saying yes to means you're saying no to other things. So yeah, it's tricky for sure, but it's also about how you say no, right? So there's a difference between one of those people that doesn't feel like they're wanting to help or contribute. Yeah. The way that they say no might be quite different than the way that Ryan would say no, when I know Ryan is dedicated and hardworking and stuff. So if Ryan says no, it means it's like typically a well thought out no, right?
I want to just reintroduce who's talking to us right now, because you've been sharing such great information. Dr. Laura Hambly, organizational psychologist, as we talk about saying no at work. And please continue sharing what you were saying.
Yeah, so it's about the way that you say no. And if you are someone who's trustworthy, reliable, hardworking, then your boss and your team are going to trust that when you say no, it's for the right reasons, right? It's not like you're saying no all the time and you just don't want to take anything on. So you just got to be a person who's helpful and wants to contribute, but you need to be saying no at times, and you need to be confident but kind in your delivery of no.
But my thing is, I think the caveat to that is people are now, their expectations of you are very high. So when you're trying to kind of recondition people to understand, like, this is what I'm going, this is what I want to do and be moving forward, it can be difficult for people to understand that and accept that.
And Ryan, I'll even twist that for you, because as someone, I know you as a friend and professionally, you're also saying you're changing your expectations of you.
Yeah.
To not connect it to this thing you're saying yes or no to, that this means like you're either a really good employee or a bad employee.
Oh, so how do you unpack that? Please, let's work.
It's about the more things that you say yes to, okay, then your no holds less value, right? If you say yes to everything, it's just you're not going to meet your deadlines. You're going to be burnt out. Your quality is going to suffer. And what happens is, if people who are constantly working extra hours, that becomes the expectation. So when suddenly Ryan starts working normal hours, it's going to look like he's decreasing his commitment. So I'm always about make sure you're careful if you're working overtime that it's not going to become a habit, because that will set your bar. That's
and also I feel like a lot of times you start building resentment. And then how are you a good team player while you're saying yes and hating everyone else? It kind of defeats the purpose of saying yes with enjoyment. You want to say yes because you actually believe it and you're going to enjoy it versus regret it.
Yeah. Because I can get a lot done. But if I'm, you know, short and snappy and rude to my colleagues, and like, I'm not fun to work with.
Exactly.
And I think they would rather Laura said no than be a little bag. Right?
Totally. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much again for joining us for this. We appreciate it.
Yeah. My pleasure, you guys. Keep up the great work.
A lot of things to think about. Thank you. That was Dr. Laura Hambly, who's an organizational psychologist. Now coming up, how one woman is interrupting people at the airport to brighten their day, not to be annoying. That's next on our Yaz Queen of the Day. We're wrapping up the show as always with our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
Okay, we all need some positivity. This is our daily dose of positivity for us and you, okay? So here's this one. While traveling for work, a Houston woman has been giving homemade cards to strangers who might need a pick-me-up at the Houston airport. I love this. She and her son Parker have been writing messages for strangers for 3 years now. And to date, they've written 25,000 notes to uplift others.
You have to wear a mask, so you can't see somebody's smile or if they're sad. So if you watch somebody's eyes, you can kind of determine, you know, maybe that person needs a little pick-me-up.
Perhaps now more than ever.
I think people need to know that there's still kindness in this world.
Isn't this nice? This makes you wonder, like, what you could be doing for someone today, or while you're just doing your everyday routine or traveling, there's always a way to do something even small.
Well, I will tell you one thing that you can do for your neighbor. You can socially distance. You can follow the rules. You can wear a mask. That is the same thing as this woman giving away homemade cards of kindness. That's how I see it. And honestly, this was very beautiful in the fact that she's really helping a lot of people. And I know Houston, Texas, at one point was also turning into kind of like an epicenter.
A hot spot.
And so that area has been through a lot. And so this is wonderful when she sees people at the airport, which really makes me wonder, how often does she travel? But this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I love the name Parker. It reminds me of Spider-Man.
Thank you for that, Ryan.
It does.
Ask the questions on everyone's minds. How much does she travel? The real question.
Yeah, because 25,000 notes, that is a lot for her just to be traveling. Girl, her sky miles are out of this world.
You know, this also reminds me of a random act of kindness that someone did for me, actually, while I was traveling. I don't think I ever talked about this. While I was on the road, I was ordering breakfast and we were in back of this young woman and we hear her say to the person, you know, at the register, "Hey, I've got them in the back of me." And we're like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, I'm paying for you today." And we're like, "No."
You know, that's a thing, right? You know, because my mom actually used to do that a lot when I was younger, where it is kind of turned into more of a movement where if you want to give a random act of kindness, that's like the best way of doing it. Paying for someone's food behind you, you're supposed to pass it on.
Yeah. I was really impressed, and that she was a high school student.
Oh,
and she
wow.
said to me, "Wait, listen to this." I go, "Please, you really don't need to." And she goes, "Don't worry, I have like way too much money," or something, which is also weird.
Yes.
Then I got curious, like, okay, are you like, does she, or is it more the idea of like, if she can think that she's abundant and like, who knows what she has? Like, maybe we all need to look at ourselves as like abundant, despite our circumstances or despite how we compare ourselves to others.
That is
incredible. Really interesting. Yeah, it was an interesting reminder and lesson. And then the person I was with ended up doing that for someone another day.
Yes, you're supposed to pay it forward. I love that. That's incredible.
All right. That does it for our Yes Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And y'all, I'm becoming like you, Ryan. Okay. Now, coming up on tomorrow's show, because we are here for you weekdays on Channel Q, are temperature checks really going to save us from coronavirus? I'm always like...
That's a good question, actually, because people are checking the temperatures.
But it's questionable because you don't always need to have a temperature to have it. And why women lead protest movements. I'm excited for this one. We're going to have a really great guest for this. That's tomorrow's show, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Again, we have a podcast up of all our shows and our interviews. Join
our podcast family. Just go to the radio.com app, search Let's Go There, and subscribe so you're notified when we post new episodes. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.